Good morning. Today's daf is daf Yud Aleph in Chulin. We're a little bit behind. We're back on daf Yud Amud Aleph, and we are in the middle of a basic machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So again, the question comes up in the Gemara. The question started on towards the top of daf Yud Amud Aleph. What if I shech with a knife? I check the knife before I shech it to make sure there's no pegima, make sure there's no nick in the knife. Had there been a nick in the knife prior to the shechita, so the shechita would not be a good shechita. So Rashi, the way Rashi sets it up, it's an issue of ikur. Since there's a nick in the knife, you're no longer cutting the neck of the animal, but you're tearing at the neck of the animal, you're ripping at the neck of the animal. So what would be the halacha? So that for sure we know the shechita would not be good shechita, but what would be the halacha if you check the knife beforehand, and then after you check the knife beforehand, and the knife checked out, and then you did shechita, and post shechita you find that there's a nick in the knife. So what happens at that point in time? So Rav Huna is of the position that the shechita is not going to be a good shechita, and Rav Huna, just to make sure that we're totally clear on his position, says, look, let's say after you shech the knife, you start cutting bones with that very same knife afterwards. Right as we pointed out, a person shouldn't really do that. That's, you know, borders on insanity. But let's say he cuts bones with that knife for the rest of the day. So, and now you have a very good explanation, an extraordinarily good reason as to say why it is that there's a nick in the knife, because I cut bones. Rav Huna says the shechita is still not a good shechita. Okay, and what's behind Rav Huna? So the Gemara says what's behind Rav Huna is what we learned back on Daf Tes, which is Rav Huna says that there's a chazaka. There is a powerful force called chazaka. Chazaka is basically presumption and continuation of the previous status. We know that the animal prior to the shechita is a forbidden animal, right? It's Eivor Min HaChayit, it's Enoshchuta, whatever the prohibition is. And that perpetuates until you know with absolute certainty that shechita has been performed. So once there's any question mark in the shechita itself, Rav Huna says, that's it, you no longer can say that the animal was shechta. You're going to go back to the previous chazaka. The previous chazaka is the animal's prohibited, and so therefore the animal is going to be prohibited. This is the opinion of Rav Huna, and Rav Huna is predicated on the principle of chazaka. Then we saw that there's the opinion of Rav Chista. Rav Chista argues with Rav Huna. He says that the animal is kasher. Why? Because shema be'esem nifkama. Because it's very possible that the nick in the knife happened as a result of you cutting the bones. Now, question that was asked yesterday, Ben asked this question yesterday, is Rav Chista going to maintain his position even if you didn't cut bones? And the Gemara's answer, which is we're going to see later on this morning, is yeah, even if you didn't cut bones, Rav Chista is going to say that the shechita is a good shechita. Okay?
What is the reason that?
Okay, so, right, so then Ben asks another good question, so then what's the explanation behind Rav Chista? So, later on this morning, I'm going to discuss a little bit more what's behind Rav Chista. So stay tuned. Good. The Gemara yesterday brought in a Braisa. A Braisa to support Rav Huna. Okay? Yeah. The Gemara brought in a Braisa to support Rav Huna, and the Braisa went like this. You toveled in a mikvah, and after having toveled in the mikvah, you come up from the mikvah and you find a chatzitza. You find something on your body, a foreign matter on your body, and the Braisa says, and even if after you toveled in the mikvah, you spent the whole day working with that item, whatever item it is, right, a piece of dirt, right, anything, glue, whatever, and you wouldn't been working with that all day after you toveled in the mikvah, the Braisa says, nevertheless, your tefillah did not work, because we're going to assume that the chatzitza was on your body prior to you toveling in the mikvah, and so therefore you're going to have to go back and you have to tovel again. The only way that the tefillah would work is if you said barili shalohi alai kodem. Only if you could say I know for sure, meaning I did a full examination of the body. Right? Some areas of the body you're not going to be able to see, but maybe mirrors. I did a full examination of the body prior to when I toveled in the mikvah, and I know for a fact that I did not have this on my body prior to me going in the mikvah. But otherwise, we're going to say that there is a chazaka, a presumption. You were not tahor, you were tameh. You toveled in the mikvah. The mikvah obviously is what's now going to change that chazaka, but if now there's a question mark in the act of tefillah, so now we're going to go back. I'm going to go back to your previous chazaka. Good. So the Gemara brought this as a proof to Rav Huna. Now, the case between this and the case of shechita, as the Gemara points out, runs almost parallel one with another. But there is one major difference between the two cases, which the Gemara itself highlights. And that is the following. And this brisa may not be a support to Rav Huna. What's the one difference between the two? So the Gemara basically says it like this. In the case of Shechita, so the question mark comes up on something that's external to the animal. Meaning our question is a question of the animal. Was the animal shechted, yes or no? So now there's a question mark, but the question mark's not in the animal. It's in the knife. The knife is something external to the animal. Now, of course, the knife is facilitating shechita, right? But still, the knife is something external to the animal. So, but in the case of toveling in the mikvah, the question mark is on you, the person who's toveling in the mikvah, because now you yourself found a chatzitza on your own body. So the Gemara says that's a big difference between the two cases, and that's why this brisa may not be supportive of Rav Huna. Good. Then the next thing we did yesterday, towards the end of the daf yesterday, is I pointed to a Tosos on the bottom of the page, where Tosos is bothered because we have a similar case in the beginning of Masech Danida, which actually is directly parallel with our case of Shechita. And the case that Tosos brings in the beginning of Nida is the following. Let's say you tov on the mikvah. Mikvah, you know, at one point previously had 40 sa'ah of water in order to make it a kosher mikvah. And then, after you tov on the mikvah, someone said, mikvah looks a little low. Can we measure it? Mikvah's measured. Mikvah has less than 40. So what does the Mishnah, what does the Gemara Nida say? Gemara Nida says, no good. You got to go back and you got to tovel again. So the Gemara, now Tosos points out, now wait a second. That is exactly, in concept, the same thing as we discussed in the case of Shechita, where I know for a fact that in the case of Shechita, the animal is usur. Just like here, I know for a fact that the person's tummy. Then they do something to change that status. In the case of Shechita, you shecht. In the case of the mikvah, you tov on the mikvah. And then afterwards, there's a question mark. And the question mark is not on the animal, but on the knife. Here, the question mark is not on the person, but on the mikvah. And so Tosfos says, so really the cases run parallel one with another. So, so v'hachanami neima, so Tosfos says, hemet behema cheskasa ve'ema lo nishkata darei sakim pagam lefanecha. So just like in the case of mikvah, we're going to say that the tefillah is no good. So too in the case of shechita, let's say that the shechita is no good. Right? How come our Gemara doesn't use that case where the Gemara Nida is extraordinarily clear and decisive? How come the Gemara doesn't use that case to bring a full support to Rav Huna? What's the difference between the case of the Shechit and the case of the Mikvah, where you found the Mikvah to be diminished, depleted in its shear? Okay, it's a powerful question. It's a strong question. Tosfos gives three answers. I'm going to quickly go through, summarize the three answers of Tosfos. Bottom Tosfos, I'm starting with the words V'yesh Lomar. It's about seven lines down in Tosfos. V'yesh Lomar Deshani Hasam De'ikol Amemer Chosav Asayke De'kamar Hasam. Okay, so answer number one says Tosfos, that you got to look at the way it becomes disqualified, meaning in the case of mikvah, right, it had a shear and now it doesn't have a shear. Okay, how does that work normally? How does your pool lose water? So gradually, over the course of time. So in other words, if the mikvah doesn't have a shear right now, did that happen momentarily? Did that happen instantaneously? No, it's been this way now for a while. So we don't know exactly when before has it diminished, but we do know that it did not happen a second ago, 2 seconds ago, a minute ago. It happened some time ago. So now to the question of, did I tovel in a kasha mikvah? So now the argument is, I don't know, and now it doesn't have a shear, and we're certainly going to have to go back in time to say when it did have a shear, so might as well go back to the last time that you actually checked the mikvah. Okay, so that's answer number one, says Tosfos. As opposed to over here, when you shecht an animal, so when does a knife get a nick? That can happen instantaneously. Meaning all he needs to do is get caught on something, and the knife can get a nick. Okay, so that's answer number one, says Tosfos. So, additionally, Tosfos says you can make another argument as well. That over here in the case of Shechita, look, etzem vaday poge, meaning I'm shechting, and part of the act of shechita is that I'm going to go through the neck of the animal, and I'm going to make contact with the vertebrae of the animal. Okay, so here in the case of shechita, in support of Rav Chisda, you can make an argument, and we're going to see this later on the Gemara as well, that once you hit the bone in the back of the neck of the animal,
you've done
the shechita, you passed the point of shechita, and it's the neck bone which created the pegima, the nick in the knife. Do we know that with absolute certainty?
No.
Not absolute, but certainly there's a good argument that you can present.
There are only two possibilities, either the skin or the bone.
Right, and the bone, and the Gemara is going to say this later on, it's more likely, it's certainly more logistically plausible to say that it's the bone that created the begima. Okay, that is a second answer of Tosfos in terms of distinguishing the case of the mikvah versus the case of the shechita. And then I know Tosfos goes for a third answer. Okay, skipping now to third to last narrow line of Tosfos, middle of the line, the Oye Shlomar. Another answer, says Tosfos, is like this. Look, I shechted with a knife. Now, let's go over what just happened. I checked the knife before, and the knife was fine beforehand. Afterwards, it turns out the knife has a pegima, has a nick in the knife. Look, first of all, you don't know when it happened. Secondly, says Tosfos, even if we're going to argue that the nick happened when I made contact with the front of the neck of the animal, okay, but the knife is a long knife. It could be that what I cut the simanim with is part of the knife that doesn't have a nick on it. It's not that a nicked knife is disqualified. It's that if I cut with the part of the nick, that would render the animal not shechted. But over here, I actually cut, maybe the possibility is I cut with the part of the knife that wasn't nicked. So in other words, Tosfos says, you can advance more than one argument in terms of why the shechita is a good shechita. As opposed to the case of the mikvah, where you told them the mikvah, and now you measured it afterwards, and the mikvah is depleted and it doesn't have a shear, so what else are you going to say? Right? There's now a strong argument to suggest that you did not tovel nakasha mikvah, as opposed to the case of the shechita, even though there is a question mark, but it's a weak question mark because you can make a number of arguments as to why the shechita was a good shechita. Okay. So again, Tosfos over here goes through three possible suggestions in terms of why our case of shechita is fundamentally different than the case of toveling the mikvah and learning that the mikvah is depleted in water. Good. Let's go back to the Gemara. Let's continue in the Gemara. We're towards the bottom of the page, Meisvei. The Gemara now is going to challenge based on a Tosefta. Shachet v'vesev achakach nishmata ha-gargaris. Let me give one piece of background before we discuss the following Tosefta. We're talking about shechting a bird. Okay? Birds need shechita. Okay? Our chickens, our turkeys, and ducks. There's obviously a lot more goose. Yeah. Okay, so there's a lot more birds that are kosher than the ones that I just listed, but the ones that I listed are the ones that we have a tradition are kosher. Okay, we'll talk about kashrus of birds is coming up later in the Masechta. We'll talk about the simane kashrus of a bird. But there's one thing that you need to know for now about shechting a bird, and that is, by a bird, you only need to cut one simen, either the trachea or the esophagus. There is no requirement to cut both simanim. Both simanim is only by an animal. By a bird, you only need to cut one simen. Okay? The Gemara later on will cite a source for this. There's a basic machlokus, which comes up later in the Gemara, whether or not shechita is at all required min haTorah for a bird. Okay. But right now, just know the following piece of information. You only need to cut one pipe. So, shachat davesh, so you cut the esophagus, v'achakach nishmata ha-gargaris, and then the trachea got dislocated. Now, it's a neat trick to shecht the esophagus without having to cut the trachea, okay, admittedly. But again, that's not the point right now. The point simply is that I shechted one pipe, and then the trachea becomes dislocated, kshera. That's fine. Meaning because I cut one simen, the other simen was in place, so you're fine, you're good. However, nishmata agargers v'acharkach shachad is a vesh. Let's say the trachea becomes dislocated, okay, and then you shech the esophagus psula. That shechita is going to be disqualified. Okay, why? Meaning, if you think about it, you say to yourself, "Yeah, but the pipe that I cut happened to have been in its rightful place. What difference does it make that the trachea happens to have been dislocated at the time? That wasn't the pipe that I cut." Okay, so okay, fine. But the answer is going to be very simply: both pipes need to be in its place, even though there's only a requirement to cut one of the two pipes. Both pipes need to be in the plate in its correct place when I do shechita. Shachat tevesh v'nimsta hagager shmuta v'ene yadeim kodem shechita nishpatayim la'achar shechita nishchata. Okay, but here's now the case that we want to see. What if I do the following? What if I cut the esophagus, okay, and then turns out, we do a simple examination of the bird after I shacked it, and it turns out that the trachea was dislocated. And I do not know when it had happened. Did it happen before shechita or did it happen after shechita? And that, of course, makes all the difference in the world. If it dislocated before shechita, it would be puzzle. If it dislocated after, it would be kasha, but I don't know. So here we go. Zeha yamaisav amru kol safik b'shechita puzzle. Kol safik period. End of the Tosefta. So the Tosefta punctuates by saying, it's a psul in the shechita. Anytime you have a psul in the shechita, it's not going to be a good shechita. Okay, that's how the Tosefta ends off. Now, you read the Tosefta, and you read the punctuation of the Tosefta, and then you say to yourself, this sounds a lot like Rav Huna, doesn't it? Right. So, kol safik b'shechita lasui, my love lasui chiyai gavna. So the Gemara now sounds like, fine, wouldn't our case, where I shechted with a knife, and then after I shechted with a knife, I find a nick on the knife. So wouldn't this case also be included in the Tosefta as well? Now the Tosefta doesn't speak about this case, but the Tosefta gives us a very broad blanket statement. Kol safik shebishchita, anytime you have a doubt in the shechita, we're going to say that the animal's not shechted. So the Gemara says, lola, so you safik sha, safik daras. So the Gemara says, no. Now, when the Tosefta says the words kol safik shebishchita, it's talking about the act of shechita. Meaning, did I do hadrasa? I'm not sure. Meaning, I know I'm supposed to go back and forth, but maybe I pushed in. And the shochet has now a legitimate doubt in terms of whether he went back and forth or whether he pushed in. Normally, he'll assume he went back and forth. That's what he always does. But here he said, I think I pushed in, I'm not sure. That's kol safik shebishchita. Or maybe he did shehiyah, maybe he paused. If something was questionable in the act of shechita, so then we're going to say it's no good. But over here, he knows he did the act of shechita properly. It's now just a question of, oh, I found the nick on the knife afterwards. So maybe the Tosefta would be okay with that. Umayshna, so the Gemara says, and give us a simple explanation. The Gemara says, I'll give you a very simple explanation. And again, the Gemara goes back to that very basic point that we made earlier. That if there's a question in the animal itself, so then we're going to say the animal wasn't shechted. But if there's a question not in the animal, but in the knife is something external to the animal. So then we're going to say that the shechting was a good shechita. Okay. Now, Eddie, this is our time. So we have now a basic machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Right? Rav Huna says that if I find something wrong with the knife after I shecht it, if there's a nick in the knife after I shecht it, the shechita is simply no good. Okay? That's the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Chista says, no, the shechita is going to be a good shechita. So who do we follow like? V'hilchasa kavase de Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, the halachas we follow like Rav Huna, but... but kishaloshiber ba'etzem. That's only if you don't cut a bone afterwards. Meaning, so now we don't have a good way to explain that the nick came afterwards. If we have a very plausible explanation in terms of why the nick came after I shechted, like for example, I cut bones afterwards, so then good. So then we'll say that the nick came afterwards. But if I don't have a plausible explanation, so then Rav Huna, the Gemara says, we follow the halacha like Rav Huna.
So is this like a loophole to save the...
Yeah. Well, what you're suggesting is that after you shecht, then hit the knife and... Yes. Right, and then now you're safe, so to say. Okay.
But then you lose your knife.
Right, I'm going to say it would... Okay. The hilchasa, And then the Gemara points out, and the halacha follows like Rav Chisda, if in fact you cut a bone after you shecht it.
Who's telling us what the halacha
is? This is the Gemara. Now I know that, Aaron, that's not a good answer to your question. Right? When the Gemara starts off saying like this, v'hilchasa, and this is a halacha, so it could be Ravina Rav Ashi. Right. Based on a consensus that was drawn in the base medrash, meaning Ravina Rav Ashi, when they were writing the Gemara, so they have generations now of debate, and to a certain issues were discussed and concluded. Some people suggest that when you see the Hilchasa. And again, on our Gemara right now, Rashi Tosfos, right, they don't discuss it. But sometimes you'll see, right, Rashi Tosfos say this came after the Gemara was after Ravina Rav Ashi, right, a period of time where we call Savarayim, right, after the editing of the Gemara. Is that the case over here? I don't know, and it, quite frankly, it doesn't matter.
There's no time involved at all. This is amazing.
Yeah. Right. This is such a basic issue. Now we're going to get to Ben's issue, which is the following. You hear what the Gemara just said? That if I break bones afterwards, if I cut bones afterwards, we're gonna follow like Rav Chisda. If I don't cut bones afterwards, we're gonna follow like Rav Huna. Okay, and basically, what the Gemara is saying is we're tipping our hat to Rav Huna, right? Meaning the animal's not shechted, the animal's aser, and unless we know that the animal for sure was shechted, we're gonna go back to our previous chazaka. If, however, I have a good explanation to why the animal was nicked, why the knife was nicked, so then we'll go like Rav Chisda. But if you listen carefully to what the Gemara is saying, and this is what Ben's point was earlier, it sounds like Rav Chisda, meaning himself, he's of the position that the Shechita, we're always going to consider the Shechita good, even if I don't cut bones. Right. Now, if that's the case, so the Gemara now is going to try to understand Rav Chisda a little bit better. Mechlal de Rav Chisda alfa gav de lo shibar ba'etzem. So even if I don't cut bones after I shechted, Rav Chisda is going to tell you the shechita is going to be a good shechita. How does that work? Ela b'may ifkein. The Gemara asks such a basic question. So when did the nick take place? I shechted an animal. I look at my knife after I shechted the animal. There's a nick in the knife, and Rav Chisda says, it's okay. The shechita is good.
And you know for sure that was with the knife.
And you checked the knife beforehand, the knife before was fine. But when did the nick take place? Ema be'etzem demafrakes ifkem. So the Gemara says that according to Rav Chisda, what we're going to argue is that you know when the knife got nicked? Because what happens is I go through the front of the neck, everything is nice and soft, the hide, the pipes, it's nice and soft, it's, you know, it's muscles and cartilage. And only when I get to the back of the neck of the animal, that's when the knife got nicked. Now, I'll make a point which Rashi doesn't point out, Tosas neither. Other Rishonim point out that maybe you could make the following argument for Rav Chisda, and this will reflect on your question that you asked me earlier. The question is, according to Rav Chisda, what does he do? He dismisses the whole concept of Chazaka? Meaning, does he just simply refute Rav Huna's basic premise of Chazaka, which, as we'll learn through the course of today's daf, that's a very basic concept. Chazaka is a very basic concept. And what Rav Chisda will say in his defense, and the Gemara doesn't say this, and this is all in the Rishonim, what Rav Chisda will say is, I do believe in Chazaka. But you're focusing on the Chazaka of the animal. I'm focusing on a different Chazaka. The Chazaka of the knife. Meaning, we checked the knife before we shechted the animal. The knife checked out. So now, it's true, post-shechita I found a nick in the knife. But Chazaka will tell me that the knife was a good knife through the act of Shechita. Oh, there's a nick in the knife? Okay, I have an explanation. The knife was nicked at the back of the neck of the animal, when it hit the bone of the animal. But then the Rishonim say, but what is behind that explanation? What's behind that explanation is that Rav Chisda too believes in the concept of Chazaka, but just simply the Chazaka of the knife.
But the thing is, this could actually be a concept of rove. Because if you say that, if you were to use that knife to cut the skin 100 times,
right,
and cut the bone
100
times, rove of time is going to be by the
right
bone.
Sometimes,
and
right.
Is it?
Right. Okay, I'm with you. Gemara, the Gemara tells us the story. Have a uvda v'tara for Rav Yosef atleser chiyusa. a shochet was shechting, and he just kept shechting one animal after another animal after another animal. And after the 13th animal, he looks at the knife, and the knife has a nick in it. Oh boy, that's going to be a problem, right? And Rav Yosef, the question came in front of Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef said, no good. And Rav Yosef says, and when I say no good, I mean all 13 animals. That's a lot. All 13 animals are going to be disqualified. So, Kaman Karavuna Vafilu B'Kamaisa, so the Gemara says, who's he going? Who's he following? Who is Rav Yosef following? Now, Ravuna and Rav Chista are early generation Amorayim. Right, they are both students of Rav, Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So is he following Rav Huna, says the Gemara? And is he disqualifying even the first animal? And so the Gemara says, Lo, Rav Chista lavar mi kamaisa. The Gemara says, no, he's following Rav Chista. And all the animals he treif up except for the first animal. Because remember, according to Rav Chista, that first animal is going to be fine. You check the knife before the first animal. And Rav Chista, our explanation of Rav Chista was, when the knife become nicked, when you hit the neck bone of the Shechita. So, Rav Chista will argue that that happened at the end of the Shechita, the first animal is fine. The Gemara is suggesting. Again, it's interesting. We don't know, meaning we know that Rav Yosef trafed up the animals. The only question on the table is, did he trafe up the first animal? And the Gemara says, well, it kind of depends on whether he falls like Rav Huna or Rav Chista. And the Gemara kind of leaves that off.
So, I'm thinking about other 12.
Yeah, yes. So the Gemara says, no, for sure he falls like Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, no, I know for a fact that he falls like Rav Huna. I know that. What? Meaning Rav Yosef. How do I know that? Because if he really subscribed to the position of Rav Chista, if he really did, so then every Shechita would be fine. Every Shechita. Because look, he shechted 13 animals in a row, consecutive back to back to back. Okay, and I know that there was a nick on the knife, but you know what? It could be that the nick came all the way at the end when he shechted the 13th animal. Okay, now remember, right? Our explanation of Rav Chista will really help us understand that. Meaning, why? How in the world is the Gemara making that suggestion? If you're Rav Chista, well, you're going to argue that the knife was only nicked by the 13th animal. That seems to be arbitrary. How did the Gemara even entertain that notion? So again, now, if we're going to go with our explanation, Rav Chista, it makes a lot of sense. Because Rav Chista says, I'm also working with Chazaka of the knife. I checked the knife before I shechted. The knife was good. So I'm going to work with the assumption until I know otherwise that the knife is in fact a good knife. Okay. Amalei Ravach, Breda Rabbala Ravashi, Rav Kahana, Matzrich, B'dikusa, Ben Kolchad V'chada. So, Rav Acha, son of Rav, says to Rav Ashi that when Rav Kahana, by the way, another student of Rav, when Rav Kahana shechted, he required a bedika between every shechting. Kaman ka Rav Huna, Olam Ifso Kamaisa. Now again, the Gemara says that when he requires a bedika between every shechting, is it because he falls like Rav Huna? The Gemara says, "Lo, Rav Chista lach shure basraisa." So the Gemara says, "Well, maybe he falls like Rav Chista." And maybe it's because he wants to be machshir any animal that I shech subsequently. So the Gemara says, okay, does that mean now that you have to show it to the chacham every single time? We alluded to this halacha earlier in the Masechta. We know that when you shech, when the shochet shechs, he has to first present the knife to the Talmud Chacham of the city. It's a way of showing kavod to the Talmud Chacham. You know, in other words, anyone really could check the knife, but it's a way of generating and extenuating a form of kavod to the Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara says, no, Eidecha Neman Bisurin. Bisurin. So the Gemara says, no, of course not. In other words, he himself could check the knife between every Shechita. Ihachi Mikar Namilo. So the Gemara says, okay, so before you shech the first time of the day, why do you need to show it to the Talmud Chacham? So the Gemara now explains, Amar Rav Yochanan, Lo Amar, Laharasakan Lachacham, Ela Bimne Kvodo Shachacham. That's just simply a form of honoring the Chacham of your community. But after that point in time, meaning when you go back and you shecht now, so even though Rav Kahana does require a bedika between every Shechita, but you could do it yourself. You don't have to give it to the Talmud Chacham. You did it already once. You showed him, you paid him your proper respect. The Gemara advances this basic rule, Eid Echad Neman B'Isurin, that when it comes to Issa, when it comes to forbidden matters, Issa V'Heter, so all you need is one witness. How do I know that? The Gemara says it like, you know, like a mantra. Like, you know, like this is it. Eidech anan man bisurin. The Gemara doesn't give us any source for this whatsoever. So good. Very good. So Rashi, take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi, as the lines get, start, before the lines become wide, right, five lines up from there. Eidech anan man bisurin. Dechol yachiv eyachid haminta Torah. So an individual is given credibility, is given ne'emanus by the Torah when it comes to Isser V'Heter. How do I know that? So Rashi over here says the following. V'zavachta mi'bekarcha u'mitzoncha v'shachat es ben ha'bekar v'achli ko'anim al yado v'lo iskiko lehamid eidim b'davar. So source number one, says Rashi, is the act of Shechita. Meaning, the Torah says, v'zavachta, and you will shecht. And there doesn't seem to be anyone else there. And meanwhile, even though one person shechted, Kohanim can eat from the Shechita, even though there were no Edom that were required. Okay, that's one source that says Rashi. By the way, these sources are not actually in the Gemara. Rashi himself is the one who generates these sources in terms of it. But in other words, you need to, because the Gemara keeps saying, Eidech ha-Neman bisurin. It's one of those things which is, you know, Chok v'lo yavr in the Gemara. Where does it come from? So that's one explanation, says Rashi. V'lo yistruchu Torah Eidem ala le'inyan mamon, o mitzvahs beis din, ulai arayus de'garmin dvar davar mi mamon. When do I need witnesses? Monetary issues, right? Disputes between monetary issues, right? Capital punishment, I need witnesses, or Irva, or arayus. Yeah, well, I mean,
if the wife's husband dies overseas, one aid is.
That's yeah. That's a good question. The Gemara, the end of Yevamos, goes on through an explanation over there in terms of why one witness works in that particular scenario. That's not going to be good for our discussion. To be quite frank. Because that is arayus, and that's to prevent a guna. Yeah, okay. Okay. Let's.
Don't we say the eidech anemon beisurim only lahatker?
Well, I mean, that's no. It can do both. It could create heter and it could create iser as well. Generally speaking. Okay. You should remember. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Good. Good. All right. We are now. Look at that time. Okay, we are now in the Gemara now, going to begin some of the more basic discussions in Shas. It's unbelievable. We're in the Masech Techulin, and the Gemara today will present to us two of the most basic concepts that exist in Halacha. Concept number one is called Chazaka. Concept number two is called Rov. Okay? And we've been dealing with Chazaka. I mean, that's basically, it's a springboard. It's why the Gemara right now is going to discuss Chazaka on a more global level. And the Gemara over here now is going to discuss these two very basic issues in Halacha, Chazaka and Rov. The Gemara starts off by discussing Chazaka. Minah ha-Milsa, da'amar Rabbanan uke Milsa Chazaka. Where did this come from? The Gemara is such a simple question. The Gemara phrases it so casually. Like, where did this idea come from of Chazaka? Again, Chazaka is... good English translation for the word chazaka, I keep using presumption, but you know it works in terms of translations. Chazaka basically means that here's how we saw it. When unless I know with any other information, that's what we're going to keep assuming until there's evidence to the contrary.
You can kind of go to the laws of inertia in physics.
Inertia is excellent. Right? Okay, good. Perfect. Inertia is a great way to describe the basic concept of Chazaka. Where is the source of this concept of Chazaka? So, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonah, son Amar Kra. Very interesting, you know, if given an opportunity to think about it and say, where does it come from? I would not have gone to this place. But the Gemara says this is it. So,
the place or these other places?
I'm sure we could talk about other places as well, but just in terms of creating an argument, where do we see in the Torah, based on the rules that the Torah provides for us, this concept of Chazaka? Cohen comes into a house, called into a house, Cohen's asked to make a house call. Okay? The owner of the house has seen what seems to be saras on the house. Okay? Kanega. It looks nearly. It looks like a nega. It looks like saras, but I don't want to say anything. What do I know? So I'll call my local Cohen. Cohen, who is trained in determining and diagnosing whether there is saras, so the Cohen's going to look into the house and see the spot on the wall of the house. Now, the Torah describes that the Cohen's going to leave the house after having examined the spot, and he's going to walk out of the entrance of the house. He's going to close the house, and the house will be closed for 7 days, at which point in time he's going to come back in again, and he's going to re-examine the spot. Okay. What does this have to do with Chazaka? You may wonder. You should wonder. Dilma adenafik va'asa barsole shiure. Now we know, right, there are a lot of laws regarding saras, but here we only need to know one law, which is that in order for the Kohen to render it saras, it has to have a shear, it has to have an amount. That is the size of a gris, approximately the area, surface area of a penny. Okay. Now maybe, look, here's what's happening. Cohen's in the house, he looked at the wall, okay? Took out his little measuring stick, measured up. So now it has a shear. Now what he's going to do is he's going to turn his back on the spot, and he's going to walk out of the house. Now, it could be that from the time that he turned his back and walked out of the house, could be that the saras actually shrunk in size. Could be, but the Gemara says, El alav mishum damrin uke chazake. So the Gemara says, but the reason why we don't say that is because of the concept of chazaka. Okay. So, maskev la ravach b'yakov v'dumah kagon shiyatza derech achor of dekachazileh. So kinafak. So the Gemara says, is that really such a great proof? Maybe the Kohen walked out backwards. Okay. Keeping his eye trained on that spot. All the while he's walking out of the house in order to make sure that the spot did not diminish in size. So Amalei Abayi Shtei Tshuvos B'davar. So Abayi says, nah, come on. I got 2 points to make about that. Number one, Charav Yitzia Derech Acharav Lo Shmei Yitzia. So number one, walking out backwards, that's not walking out. Okay? Right, right. So, he didn't think about, I don't know why he didn't think about that, but, okay, well, Gemara's going to make that point in just a moment. So point number one is, walking out backwards, that's not walking out. And let me ask you this question. What if the spot's on the back of the door? Even if the Kohen did walk out backwards, he's going to lose sight of that spot at one point before he walks out of the house. So, right, you gotta rely on Chazaka over there. So, Michael Amemar. V'chitim the pasach bay kavsa. Now, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do the following? In order to ensure that the spot does not shrink in size from the time that the Kohen examined it to the time that he walked out of the house, why don't we open up a window to the house? Even if a window doesn't exist. Why don't we open up a window to the house, and that'll allow us to watch the spot all the while that the Kohen's walking out of the house. The Hatanan, the Gemara says, based afel ein poskim bo chalonos l'rosas nigo. The Gemara says it's a Mishnah Negayim. You're not allowed to open up windows to a dark house in order to see a nega. Meaning, if there is natural light to see the nega, fine. And if not, you cannot open up windows. So that's it. You leave it alone. There's nothing to see. You just basically assume there's no spot. So Amalei Rava. So Rava says to Abayi is Chavrusa. Let's take your argument step by step. Right? You said walking out backwards, that's not Yitzia, that's not exiting. Gemara says, Rava says to Abayi, really? Kohen Gadol b'Yom Kippurim yochiach t'chsiv b'Yitzia v'tanan yasu valo derech k'nisa so. Right? The Torah talks about him leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Mishnah in Yuma describes that he walks out backwards. Okay? And correct, that's out of respect, but at least you see that walking out backwards does in fact qualify as Yitzia.
Maybe that's an exception.
Maybe, but we don't know otherwise, and Rava says, look, I dismiss your first point. Look, this idea that you don't open up windows in a house to see an egg, right, that's if it's a dark house, and I don't know anything else, meaning we don't have any chazaka that there's a nega over there. But avahechad is chazek, it's chazek. But over here, I know there's a nega on the house. I see it. And maybe to ensure that the nega does not shrink, maybe we're going to open up another window in the house in order to make sure that the nega doesn't shrink as the kohen leaves the house. So the Gemara says, so you really haven't given me anything compelling in the story of Saras that really speaks to the idea of chazaka. Tanya deloka Rav Acha bar Yaakov. So the Gemara points out that although Rav Acha bar Yaakov wants to be dismissive about the idea of chazaka, we're going to quote a Braisa, and the Braisa certainly is going to support the whole concept of chazaka. Why? The Braisa reads like this: V'yatzak kohen min habayis yachol yelech lesoch beisav v'yaskir. Maybe the kohen can go home. Kohen visited the house, saw the spot in the house, and the kohen says, "Okay, good, yeah." And maybe the kohen can actually go back to his own house, and then from there say, "Tame." So the Gemara says, "Tame lomar el pesach habayis." No. He's got to render the house a house of nigabatim from the moment that he exits the house. Maybe he stands under the lentil. V'yaskir tamalomer kenap tamalomer min habayis ad shiyase min habayis kulo. He has to be totally outside the house. Haketzad. So the Gemara explains omid b'tzad mashkof umasgir. So what he's going to do is he's going to walk outside the house. And from there, he's going to declare Hezger, that the house now is going to be quarantined for 7 days. Now, it would work if he proclaimed it to be Hezger from inside the house, or if he went back home and declared it from his own house. It would work, but he shouldn't do it that way. Meanwhile, what do you see from the Braisa? You see from the Braisa that he's going to make a declaration that the house is Mitzara, even though he walked out of the house, even if he walked all the way back home. So you see that this is supportive to the idea of Chazaka. And now, Rav Ach...
I had a Chazaka that it was clean until he makes the statement.
No, because it... In other words, he saw it, it had a shear, and from that point forward, you're going to assume that it has a Chazaka. Okay. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, the Gemara says... Now, if you're Rav Acha bar Yaakov and you still want to be defensive of your position that this whole parsha of Nigei Batim does not support Chazaka, what is he going to say in his defense? Kegon dekai me dari degavri v'amrei kedekai kai. So he will say, well, there's going to be a fireman's ladder, a row of people from where the spot is to where the kohen is. And right before he's going to proclaim Hezger, so there'll be this human telephone of one person to another. And you know how human telephone works, by the way.
Can you rely on them?
I mean, again, the Gemara...
Can a kohen rely on somebody else to make that declaration? It didn't change?
I guess so. I mean, the Gemara is just doing all this just to be, you know, to be argumentative. I understand that. Okay. Okay, good. Next. Move on to the next topic. Okay? So.
It wasn't accepted as chazaka.
Yeah. Meaning, Hedy, I'll be honest with you. The Gemara, before this proof of Nigei Batim, the Gemara, adopted the position of chazaka. Chazaka is one of the most basic guidelines of halacha. And it really is what shapes and forms halacha. This is simply a... it's kind of like it's not an asmachta. Asmachta is not the right word. The Gemara is just, trying to find out, can I point to anywhere in the Torah itself that really speaks to this idea? Unquestionably.
But this is not it.
The Gemara ends off, I mean, the Gemara's last line on this issue is, I could still defend Rav Acha bar Yaakov, and that this would not be the source for Chazaka. And then you don't see the Gemara going on and saying, okay, so find me another place. The Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara knows that there's a concept of chazaka. The Gemara just wants to know, can I show anywhere in the Torah where it speaks unequivocally to the idea of chazaka? Okay, next. Zilbasaruba. Okay, next big topic. Now this is today's daf, and I know we're a little bit behind, but okay. What about the concept of rov? Where do I see in the Torah the concept of rov? Okay. Those of you who were fortunate enough to hear Rabbi Lander last Shabbos, so he spoke beautifully on the topic of Rov. So a lot of what we're going to do now is, he spoke about chabur after hashkama. So minal milsa damar rabbanan zil basaruba minalan. So the Gemara says minalan, right? What? What concept of rove? Well, you're asking me where in the Torah do we see it? Dichsiv achrei rabban lahatos. So the Gemara says we have a pasuk that we follow the majority. What are you asking me about majority? So ruba diisa kaman kegon teschan yosef sanhedrin lo kami bayilan ki kami bayilan ruba the lesser kaman kegon katanu katana minalan. Look, there are two types of roves. Ruba diisa kaman. The Gemara gives two examples. We have a Sanhedrin. It's a capital case. 23 judges. Who thinks that this person is guilty? Raise your hand. So we go around the room and we start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, and you need a majority. A strong majority.
I thought it was unanimous.
Huh?
I thought it was unanimous.
No. They're based on each capital punishment. No, each one of them gets a vote. Acharei rabim lahatos. You follow the majority.
Yeah.
Majority of the judges say that he is guilty. So good. So now we're going to go with guilty. Even though 10 judges believe that he is not, this is not a capital offense, and that the death penalty is not in play over here, but if 13 of those 23 judges say that he's guilty. Okay? So that's example number one. That's Ruba de Isa Kaman. Example number two. Classic example that we've spoken about many times in the Daf Yomi, where I have a piece of meat in the middle of the street, and there are 10 stores, 9 of them are kosher, 1 of them is not kosher. I don't know where this meat comes from, but look around, right? Look around the block, 9 of the stores are kosher, so now I have a visible majority that tells me that this meat comes from a kosher store. Fine. That I know, acharei rabim lahatos. That's not my question. My question is on probability. Ruba de lesa kaman. Let's say, for example, the Gemara gives the following example: katanu katana. Okay, we know that the following. I'll just explain this, and then we're going to have to end for today. We know, for example, that in the case of yibum, where a man is married to a woman, the man dies, and they die, and he dies childless. So we know that the brother has a mitzvah opportunity of yibum. Okay.
Could be a little brother.
Could be a baby brother. And it could be, and I know in our society this doesn't work, but could be that the woman, the widow, is a katana. She's a minor. Now, if there's no mitzvah of yibum, the two, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, are absolutely forbidden to one another. They are an erva to one another. And meanwhile, if it's b'maka mitzvah, if there's a mitzvah of yibum, so the mitzvah of yibum is going to override the iser erva. But you got to make sure that there's a mitzvah of yibum. If there's no mitzvah of yibum, so then you're pogea erva, right? Brother-in-law and sister-in-law are absolutely forbidden to one another. Now, when is there a mitzvah of yibum? When there's a capability to produce a child. If there's no capability to produce a child, so there's no mitzvah of yibum, and you're pogea be'erva. Now, in this particular scenario, the surviving brother is a katan, so we don't know yet if he is potent. The widow is a katana. We don't know yet if she is capable of childbearing. And meanwhile, the two of them can perform the mitzvah of yibum. Even though these are things yet that are not ascertained. How does that work? How can we do yibum if we don't know that he is potent and she's capable of producing children? And the answer is rov. Here, probability. Most boys develop into healthy, mature adults. Most women develop into child-producing women. So we have a concept of rove. But this is ruba de lesa kaman. This is a rove where we don't know the information and we're building ourselves based on probability. Okay. So the Gemara now wants to know, where do we see this of ruba de lesa kaman? The Gemara is going to go through approximately half a dozen different scenarios where we see we absolutely must rely on ruba de lesa kaman, and the Gemara therefore will conclude that this is the sources, multiple sources, of where we see rove. Not just ruba de isa kaman, but ruba de lesa kaman as well. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.